The following feature has been categorized by the British Board of Film Classification as PG. Sumitomo Corporation, Imagica Corporation, Cinema 10 Corporation, JSB Japan Satellite Broadcasting Incorporated, and IDE Productions. A painting of three Indian women in bright saris dancing against a yellow sky. Merchant Ivory Productions present Howard's End. Based upon the novel by E.M. Forster. Starring Anthony Hopkins and Vanessa Redgrave. With Helena Bonham Carter, Emma Thompson, James Wilby, Samuel West, Gemma Redgrave, and Prunella Scales. Summer, early 1900. The heavy train of a woman's dark grey dress trails through the long grass of a wild English garden. The dress is worn by a tall, fair-haired woman, Ruth Wilcox. She saunters languidly alone in the twilight. Around her, tall grasses are stirred by a gentle breeze. Adjusting her dress over her bare shoulder, she fingers the long chain hanging around her neck and looks about her, a wistful smile on her face. Turning aside, she raises her hand to shield her cheek from an overhanging branch. In her faded blonde hair, she wears a white blossom. Tall poplars stand stark against the evening sky as she emerges from a sunken garden, treading softly towards a red brick house covered with dense creeper. Light streams from an open window. She lingers to look into a brightly lit room where an animated group of people in evening dress are gathered around a table. They seem to be playing a game in friendly competition. Mrs. Wilcox moves slowly on towards a low door surrounded by a wooden porch. She passes the window of a dining room, where two maids in cap and apron are busily clearing away. Screenplay, Ruth Prower Jubwala. Producer, Ismail Merchant. Director, James Ivory. Later, a dark-haired girl steps out of the house into the garden and breathes the still air. A blonde young man in evening dress runs out to join her and takes her hand. He leads her away from the house and into the leafy shadows. They pause under a tree and face each other. He cradles her face and kisses her gently. His lips caress her throat. She presses soft kisses on his eager mouth. London, at breakfast.
Dearest Meg, I'm having a glorious time. I like them all. They are the very happiest, jolliest family that you could imagine. The fun of it is that they think me a noodle, and say so. At least Miss Wilcox does. Oh, Meg, shall we ever learn to talk less? Oh, but Meg, dearest, dearest Meg, I don't know what to say or what you will say. Paul Wilcox and I are in love. We are engaged.
Meg shows the letter to her brother.
Well, you Schlegel girls.
Timmy, look.
Margaret, if I may interfere, what on earth is going on?
I can tell you nothing, Aunt Julie. I know no more than you do. We only met the Wilcoxes last spring while we were hiking in Germany.
Oh, dear. Obviously, someone must go down to this Howard's house and make inquiries.
Howard's head.
No, Margaret, inquiries are necessary. What do we know about these Wilcoxes? Are they our sort? Are they likely people?
But, Aunt Julie, what does it matter? Helen's in love. That's all I need to know.
Would you please get me a train timetable here?
Howard's End, the red brick house. At an upstairs window, framed by purple wisteria, dark-haired Helen Schlegel buttons the neck of her blouse. On the landing, she greets Paul Wilcox with a smile.
Morning.
To her dismay, he hurries away downstairs. He joins his family in the dining room.
I'm afraid Crane has reported sick again.
Oh, but he was to take me to the Warringtons today for tennis. I told them.
Why, Shanning, of course. Yeah, you should get rid of him, Father. Hire a new chauffeur.
Later, in the drive.
Mother, we're off. Goodbye.
Oh, Charlie, wait.
What?
Is Papa there?
Yes,
wait
here.
A minute. We've got some sherry.
Charles Wilcox climbs into an open-topped car. As his father takes the passenger seat, Ruth pops a cherry into his mouth and throws another across the car to her daughter, Evie. Paul and Helen are standing together, waving them off.
About last night?
Nothing happened.
I'm afraid I lost my head, rather.
Yes, we both did. Must have been the moonlight. Except there was no moon. Well, that's quite all right.
He indicates the garage.
Do you mind?
They go inside, and Paul leans against the mudguard of a shining dark red car.
You see, I've no money of my own, and I still have to make my way in Nigeria. It's beastly out there for a white woman, what with the climate and the natives and all that.
Helen strokes a brass headlamp.
I say, I do think you're a ripping girl.
It's quite all right. No one knows about it. Meg! I wrote to my sister.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Yes, I'm sorry. Look, she's sure to come down. We must stop her.
We'll have to send a telegram. Oh, Crane's off sick.
Isn't there a bicycle?
Oh, yes, there is somewhere.
Paul cycles frantically down a country lane to the telegraph office.
That'll be 1037, sir.
M.J. Schlegel, 6 Wickham Place, London, West. Dear Meg, all over. Wish I'd never written. Tell no one. Helen.
Hilton. As her train draws into the station, Aunt Julie makes her way along the compartment carrying a small carpet bag. She is wearing a long grey coat and a straw hat. She gets out onto the platform. Looking around her, she bustles towards a porter.
Excuse me, I'm looking for somewhere called Howard's House.
Porter, Howard.
Porter? Mr. Wilcox, this lady wants Howard's Inn.
Begin by asking, are you the younger Mr. Wilcox or the elder?
Of the younger? The station's abominably organised. If I had my way, the whole lot of them should get the sack. Thank you, Bernard.
Thank you, sir.
Perhaps I should introduce myself. I am Miss Schlegel's aunt.
Oh, rather. Yes, Miss Schlegel's stopping with us.
Yes,
do
I
you want to see her?
We'll have to be very nice here.
Yes, I could run you up in the motor.
Charles's motor car draws up outside a shop.
All the Schlegels are exceptional. They are, of course, British to the backbone, but their father was German, and that is why they care for literature and art.
Just 1 minute.
He calls out to the shopkeeper.
Wilcox, Howard's End.
I'd like you to know that I come in no spirit of interference. I'm here to represent the family and to talk to you about Helen, Mr. Wilcox, my niece and you.
Miss Schlegel and myself.
I trust there's been no misunderstanding.
Well, it is true that I'm engaged to be married, but to another young lady, not to Miss Schlegel.
Helen wrote to us, Mr. Wilcox. She has told us everything.
Good God, it's some foolery of Paul's.
But you are Paul.
No, I'm not.
Then why did you say so at the station?
I said nothing of the sort.
I beg your pardon, you did.
I beg your pardon, I did not. My name is Charles. Do you mean to tell me that Paul and your niece have... Idiot! damn fool! Look, I warn you, it's useless. Paul hasn't a penny.
No need to warn us. The warning is all the other way.
Oh, but he hasn't told us, whereas your niece has lost no time in publishing the news.
If I were a man, Mr. Wilcox, for that last remark, I'd box your ears. You're not fit to sit in the same room as my niece.
All I know is she spread the news.
Or to clean her boots.
Might I finish my sentence, please?
No, I decline to argue with such a person. Let me out of this car. This instant.
Don't try and stand up.
Stop.
Sit down.
Stop.
Sit down.
Stop.
Just sit down. Goodness sakes.
Struggling with the driving wheel, Charles forces her to sit back in her seat. Ahead of them on the road, Paul is cycling back from the telegraph office, his coattails flying. He looks behind him as he hears the sound of the engine. They follow him into the driveway of Howards End, where Aunt Julie has difficulty opening the car door in her haste to get out of the vehicle. Looking anxious, she climbs out and runs into Helen's waiting arms. A few months later, Helen is among the attentive audience in a crowded lecture hall.
Be generally admitted that Beethoven's Fifth Symphony is the most sublime noise ever to have penetrated the ear of man. But what does it mean? We can hardly fail to recognize in this music a mighty drama, the struggle of a hero beset by perils, riding to magnificent victory and ultimate triumph, as described in the development section of the first movement. What I want to draw your attention to now is the third movement. We no longer hear the hero, but a goblin.
Thank you,
Mother. Single, solitary goblin.
Helen looks at her watch.
Across the universe, the beginning.
She unhooks an umbrella from the chair in front and edges down the row.
Why a goblin?
I beg your pardon?
Why a goblin?
It's obvious. The goblin signifies the spirit of negation.
But why specifically a goblin?
Panic and imp...
A young man who was sitting next to Helen suddenly gets up and pushes his way out. She is already descending a flight of stone stairs. Struggling into his coat, the young man follows her to the top of the staircase.
Miss! Excuse me, miss, my umbrella.
As she reaches the exit, she raises the umbrella against the heavy rain.
Miss!
She disappears amongst a sea of umbrellas. The young man dodges after her, trying to catch up, holding a newspaper over his head to protect his bowler hat. He sees her pass through a narrow gateway. Under the shabby umbrella, Helen hurries along a pavement, past a row of railings.
Miss!
He steps into a puddle. An excited wedding party emerge from a church into the pouring rain. The bridegroom, Charles Wilcox, sweeps his bride into his arms and runs to a waiting horse-drawn carriage. He helps her in. As the carriage drives away, Mr. and Mrs. Wilcox wave to their son and his new wife, Dolly. Home, Margaret is standing at a window looking thoughtfully down into the street as the same carriage draws up below and Dolly, in her wedding dress, climbs out and runs into the building opposite. Margaret sighs as she sees Mr. Wilcox and his son Paul giving instructions to the driver. She walks into the sitting room where her brother is making tea.
Astonishing bad luck that in the whole of London they could find no flat to rent. Except the one bottled right up against our library window.
Who could find no flat?
Tibby. The Wilcoxes. Surely even you remember that business last summer with Helen and Paul Wilcox.
Paul Wilcox? The one I was expected to thrash within an inch of his life.
Outside in the rain, still protecting himself with his sodden newspaper, the young man has almost caught up with Helen. He is close behind her as she crosses a road and hurries towards a row of elegant houses. She opens the front door of one of them and disappears inside. She throws the umbrella into a stand. Margaret comes quickly down the stairs.
What is it? Is Tibby ill?
Tibby's making tea.
Well, it's nothing worse than that. Now, Helen, oh dear, something odd has happened. Promise me you won't mind. It's the Wilcoxes. They've taken the flat opposite for the wedding of their son, the other son.
Helen walks into the library and looks out of the window.
You do mind?
Margaret stands behind her at the window and embraces her.
Well, Paul Wilcox pointed our house and say, there lives the girl who tried to catch me.
Oh, ridiculous. They've only taken the flat for a few weeks, the porter said.
Tibby joins them.
Do we bow or do we cut them dead?
Darling, why don't you take up Cousin Frieda's invitation and go to Hamburg for those few weeks?
Yes, I think I shall. Not that it matters, but one wouldn't want to keep bumping into Wilcoxes.
They follow their brother into the sitting room.
Don't hog all those scones, Tibby.
Helen pulls aside the lace curtain. A bedraggled figure looks up at the house.
That young man for us, do you suppose? He is for us.
She runs to the front door.
If you'll pardon me, miss, you took my umbrella. Quite inadvertently, I'm sure. At the Ethical Hall. Music and Meaning.
I'm so sorry. I do nothing but steal umbrellas. Do come in and choose one. It's all right, Annie.
Well, let's see. Is yours a hooky or a knobbly? Mine's a knobbly, at least I think it is.
No, that's Tibby's. How about this one?
Suppose you really want to open these things indoors. Oh, well, never mind.
No, it's all gone along the seams. It's an appalling umbrella. It must be mine.
He goes to take it.
I'm so sorry.
Has my sister stolen your umbrella?
Oh, not again, Helen. She is an incorrigible thief. I am so sorry.
I say, do stay for tea, Mr.
Bass.
Mr. Bass, won't you stay for tea? Oh, yes, do stay for tea, Mr. Bass. It's the least we can do, having made you all wet. Our brother's upstairs, so you'll have a chaperone.
Look, he's soaked, Meg.
Come through.
Please,
Helen,
come up.
Bring him upstairs.
He follows Helen.
What did you think of the lecture? I don't agree about the goblins, do you? But I do about the heroes and shipwreck. You see, I'd always imagined a trio of elephants dancing at that point. Well, he obviously didn't. Music and meaning.
Oh, music and meaning. Does music have meaning? Of the literary kind, I mean.
That's pure slush.
Yes.
Mr. Bast, won't you take off your coat?
And trust us with your umbrella.
Yes, now. Have some tea, won't you?
How boring it would be if it were only the score.
China tea?
Do you take sugar?
Only the score? What an insidious only.
Now, we do have the other kind of tea, if you prefer.
Well, thank you,
so do we have some scones that Tibby hasn't yet consumed?
They offer him a cup of tea and a plate of scones. Overwhelmed by their enthusiasm, he hesitates uncertainly. Margaret senses his embarrassment.
We are so very sorry to have put you to this inconvenience. I hope you will come another day. Would you? We should be so glad. Do take our card.
Thank you. If you'll excuse me, I really must be going.
He leaves the room. Helen follows, carrying the scones.
I'll see you out. Are you sure you don't want to scone for the journey?
No, thank you. I must be going. Thank you. Goodbye.
Adjusting the lace curtain, Margaret looks out towards the flat across the road. Framed in the window opposite, Ruth Wilcox and her husband are engrossed in conversation. He strokes her face and embraces her fondly. Margaret's brother joins her at the window, holding a cup and saucer.
Why didn't you make that young man welcome, Tibby? Hmm? You must do the host a little, you know. You could have coaxed him into stopping, instead of letting him be swamped by screaming women.
Tibby sips his tea. She tweaks his nose affectionately. Night. The young man walks briskly down a shabby street past smoking braziers and market stalls.
It's your hot soup here. Hot soup, lovely and warm.
Inside his flat, a young woman greets him.
You, Len. Where have you been? I'm off my head with worrying.
What?
About you.
Go, Jackie. Every time I'm 5 minutes late, is he lying dead in the road, crushed and killed in a gruesome accident?
Well, people do get killed in accidents and don't come home no more.
Anymore, Jackie. I told you I was going to a lecture on music and meaning. I lost my umbrella. It's all right, I got it back.
Glancing at the meagre food on the table, he picks up a book.
You had your tea? I've cut you a bit of tongue and jelly.
No.
Sure? I'll have it then. Funny, isn't it? Every time I worry, I get starving hungry.
Leonard looks at Margaret's card.
Thoughts are going through my head. You laugh. Are you listening, Len? Not only accidents, but you'll get wet in the rain. Did you?
No.
You said you lost your umbrella.
I thank the Lord.
He'll catch cold. He'll go to his chest. And where's the money to come from for the doctor?
And what if he is in an accident? And they take him to the hospital in the ambulance?
And him with holes in his socks.
Hey, Jackie.
I want to see.
What?
If there's holes in your socks.
Oh, stop it, Jackie.
She kneels in front of him, caressing his thigh.
Yeah.
He continues to read his book, as she slides suggestively onto his knee and strokes his hair.
Come to bed.
Just finish this chapter.
Len. You love your Jackie, do you, Len?
You let me read.
Len, are you going to make it all right?
You're not starting on that again. I've told you 100 times if I've told you once. We'll get married the day I'm 21. I'd do it before if it weren't for my brother to come and put a stop to it.
He returns to his book.
What's it to him? What's he ever done for me?
That's right. What's anyone ever done? It's just you and me. And if you was to go and leave me, I don't know what I'd do. I truly don't.
He comforts her as she puts her arms around his neck.
Now go to bed.
You come too. Come on.
The card falls onto the carpet.
Bookmarker.
Margaret Schlegel. And who is Margaret Schlegel?
Just a lady I met.
Oh, a lady. La-di-da.
Come off it, Jackie. She's 100 years old.
Says you. So that's where you had your tea.
Nice cucumber sandwiches, cut ever so thin.
She pushes the card inside his jacket and slips off her blouse as she walks into the bedroom. Leonard looks at the card again. Then, losing himself in his book, he imagines himself in a flowering sunlit meadow.
Ankle deep, he waded through the bluebells. His spirit rose and exulted as he breathed in the sun-drenched air. The glorious day was in its last decline. Long shadows lay on the sward, and from above, the leaves dripped their shimmering drops of gold-green light. Moths and butterflies swarmed in merry hosts, flittering here, glimmering there. But hush, could that be a deer?
In the bedroom, by the light of an oil lamp, Jackie unfastens her corset, and still in her underclothes, climbs onto the double bed. The fitful lights of a passing train show Leonard in the doorway. He removes his jacket and waistcoat and folds them neatly over the back of a chair. As he sits on the edge of the bed to unlace his shoes, Jackie kneels behind him and kisses his neck. Responding to her embrace, he leans back and they fall entwined together onto the bed, kissing passionately. Day, the drawing room of the Wilcox flat.
Oh, please show her in.
Holding Margaret's card, Ruth Wilcox is reclining in an armchair beside an open fire. Her face is pale, her blonde hair loose around her shoulders.
So sorry. Why, Miss Schlegel, how kind of you to call.
I've wanted to for ever so long.
But we haven't been here for ever so long.
Mrs. Wilcox, may I? You see, all that business last summer at Howard's End. Oh, no, it goes further than that. Since we met at Speyer, do you remember? That restored cathedral that we all hated so.
What I remember principally about Speyer was the great pleasure of meeting you, Miss Schlegel.
Helen's gone to Germany.
And Paul's gone to Nigeria.
So, you see, now we could meet because they can't. It's no use beating about the bush. What happened in the summer was unfortunate for both of them. Don't you feel? Because I'm sure you think the same way. Because they should not meet.
Yes, I feel that.
They belong to types that can fall in love but can't live together. I'm afraid that in 9 cases out of 10, nature pulls one way and human nature the other.
Ruth leans back wearily.
And you rattle on. I'm afraid I shall tire you out in no time.
It is true, I am not particularly well just today. But I'm so grateful for your visit, Miss Schlegel. You see, I'm quite alone. My husband and daughter have gone off on a motoring tour in Yorkshire, and the young couple are on their honeymoon, Charles and Dolly.
Oh, may I see? How lovely.
A wedding photograph.
They've gone to Naples. I can hardly imagine my Charles in Naples.
Doesn't he like travelling?
Oh, yes, he likes travel. But he does see through foreigners, so. What he would enjoy most is a motor tour through England. Charles takes after me, Miss Schlegel. He truly loves England. Not, of course, London. None of us love London.
She picks up a glass and drinks.
It's so... It makes one feel so unstable, impermanent, with houses being torn down on all sides.
Including, in the foreseeable future, ours.
Are you having to leave Wickham Place?
Yes, in 18 months or so, when the lease expires.
Have you been there long?
All our lives, we were born there.
Ruth replaces the glass.
That is monstrous. Oh, I do pity you from the bottom of my heart. I'd no idea this thing was hanging over you.
How dreadful.
Oh,
you poor, poor girls.
Well, of course, we are fond of the house, but it is an ordinary London house. We shall easily find another.
No. Not in this world.
Ruth kisses her.
Not the house that you were born in. You'll never find that again. Poor, poor girls. Howard's End was almost pulled down once. It would have killed me. It's my house, you know. It was left to me by my brother who died out in India. I love it so. I even resisted when Henry, my husband, wanted to make changes to improve the property. He knew best, of course. We even have a garage. To the west of the house, just beyond the chestnut tree, in the paddock where the pony used to be.
Where's the pony gone?
The pony, oh, dead ever so long ago.
A lunch party at the Schlegel house.
That's the vice of the Imperial.
No, that is the vice of the vulgar.
But this is a tremendous but. They take poetry seriously. They do take poetry seriously.
Yes, but is anything gained by that?
Yes. The Germans are always striving for beauty.
Oh, but Mrs. Wilcox, my father, was a German of the old school. A philosopher, an idealist. The countryman of Hegel and Kant.
But isn't that your father's sword you have upstairs in the drawing room?
Oh, yes. He was a soldier, too, when he had to be. But he was so uncomfortable about being on the winning side that he just hung up his sword and never used it again.
My idea has always been that if we could bring the mothers of the various nations together. Then there would be no more war.
Absolutely. 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 If the mothers went to war, there'd be no one left to defend. Thank you. You are fortunate in your cook. We have found it difficult to get reliable servants in London. It is difficult. Your servants have become as unreliable as we are, and we can hardly expect them to listen to radical discussions at the luncheon table. Well, Annie does very well. Don't you, Annie? You're very patient with us.
We never discuss at Howard's End, except perhaps sport.
Oh, but you should. Discussion keeps a house alive.
You will laugh at my old-fashioned ideas.
I will not.
I sometimes think it would be wiser to leave action and discussion to men.
But then where would we be with the suffrage?
I am only too thankful not to have the vote myself.
Margaret's young guests look embarrassed.
Shall we go up for coffee?
They all rise from the table and make their way upstairs. Mrs. Wilcox slowly follows them into the hall. She looks around her thoughtfully, then turns to Margaret.
What interesting lives you all lead.
No, we don't. It's no use pretending you enjoyed lunch, for you loathed it, but I hope you will forgive me by coming again alone or by asking me to you.
I enjoyed my lunch very much. Miss Schlegel, truly I did. I only wish I could have joined in more. You're so clever, yet so good.
No. Very kind of you, but I'm neither, I'm afraid.
You've been very good to me. You've kept me from brooding. I'm too apt to brood.
About what?
I don't know. I really don't know. I think about my house a great deal. You've never seen Howard's End. I want to show it to you.
In a wide London street, warmly dressed passers-by throng the pavements. Motor cars mingle with horse-drawn buses. A bicycle weaves its way between a brewer's dray and a hot chestnut seller. A carriage carrying Ruth Wilcox and Margaret passes through a high stone arch.
Now, this is the scientific approach to Christmas shopping. A list.
A list? What a good idea. Why don't you put your own name at the top of the list?
Oh, hooray! How very kind of you to start with me.
Sling. What?
Now, next, shall I put Mr. Wilcox?
Harrod's department store. Beneath an ornate wooden clock, the crowded food hall is festooned with Christmas trees and seasonal decorations, the balustrades wound with dark green foliage and deep red ribbon. Mrs. Wilcox and Margaret are slowly climbing the stairs to an upper floor. Margaret picks up a box and shows it to her companion.
Thank you. Very good.
I'm glad.
Oh, you are wonderfully efficient.
Margaret hands the box to a shop assistant.
But your name still remains at the top of the list.
Yes.
So, Dolly, here she goes. I would like to give you something worth your friendship. Couldn't you get it renewed?
I beg
the lease, the lease of your house.
Oh, have you been thinking of that? How very kind of you.
Surely something could be done.
No, values have risen too enormously. They mean to pull down Wickham Place and build flats like yours.
But how horrible.
Landlords are horrible.
And so are the flats they build. I fail to understand how people can actually choose to live in them.
The Wilcox living room. Margaret is handing her parcels to the maid.
Oh, dear. There they are. Thank you. Thank you.
Ruth Wilcox rearranges the cushions on the sofa as Margaret takes off her gloves. With effort, Ruth removes her hat.
Oh, I'm so sorry. We shouldn't have done this today.
No, no, we had to do it before.
Before?
Before my operation. I still haven't told my family yet, Miss Schlegel. Everyone hates illnesses. That's as it should be. There's a chestnut tree at Howard's End. It has pig's teeth stuck into the trunk about 4 feet from the ground. Yes, the teeth of a pig. The country people put them there long ago, and they think that if they chew a piece of the bark, it will cure the toothache.
So I love folklore and the old superstitions. It's curious, though, that unlike Greece, England has no true mythology. All we have are witches and fairies.
Mm. Will you come with me to Howard's End?
Oh, I would so much like to.
Come with me now. Now, come with me now.
Now, but it is too
late,
surely.
There's a train from St. Pancras at 5 o'clock if we hurry. I want you to see it.
Oh, and I want to see it. It sounds such a glorious place. So redolent. And...
Yes, yes. I lived there long, long before I was married. I was born there.
Well, might I come some other day?
Yes. Some other day.
She turns away and puts down her hat. Margaret bites her lip, regretting her reply.
Well, a thousand thanks, Miss Schlegel, for your help. It is a comfort to have the presence off my mind, the Christmas cards especially. I do admire your choice.
Later, at St. Pancras, the station clock shows 4:45. Ruth Wilcox is crossing the booking hall. Outside in the street, Margaret alights from a hansom cab. She pays the driver and runs into the station. Ruth is at the booking office window.
Mrs. Wilcox. Miss Schlegel, I will come if I still may.
Return to Hilton, please.
You must stop the night, my dear.
Yes.
It's in the morning. My house looks most beautiful. 2 returns, please.
Thank you.
Picking up a bag.
This is yours.
I can't show you my meadow properly except in the sunrise.
It was so romantic. It was in Italy.
In Italy?
Yes, and the 2 trains stopped on either side, you see, and I opened a window and this this man just handed a rose across. I don't know where he got it.
Was he Italian?
Yes, I think so, Italian.
Ah, he'd have to be Italian, wouldn't he?
Meadow! Yes. Oh, my dear,
Ruth, what on earth are you doing here?
To New Yorkshire.
We crashed the car.
What?
Are you going to Howard's End?
Yes.
Why?
Oh, darling,
how are you?
It's all such a lovely surprise. Yeah. I'm fit as a fiddle. You remember Miss Schlegel?
Oh, yes, thank you, sir. Yes, we crashed the car in New Yorkshire.
Oh, dear.
Riding the horse and some foolish. We must go home. You can't go to Howard's End. Not. It's 10 to 5.
Well, Miss Schlegel, I'm afraid our little outing is going to have to be another day.
Thank you. There's a German expression for that, I believe, Miss Schlegel.
Is aufgeschoben, ist nicht aufgehoben.
Yeah, not cancelled, but postponed.
Postponed.
Come home with us.
No, no.
Sure.
Please. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Till later.
Well, how lovely to see you.
Margaret stands alone on the platform as Ruth leaves with Henry and Evie. A nursing home. Ruth Wilcox lies in bed.
I've been thinking of you. And of our meadow.
Margaret sits beside her.
The day you are strong enough, I shall hold you to your promise.
She has brought the invalid a simple bunch of flowers. Ruth takes them and smiles with pleasure. She beckons, and as her friend leans forward, chooses a white blossom from amongst the flowers and places it lovingly in Margaret's hair. Later, on an open balcony, Evie and Charles stand together, subdued and silent, gazing down into the courtyard of the nursing home. Their father sits alone behind them, lost in thought. Evie turns as she hears footsteps. Margaret is walking along the balcony. She approaches Henry tentatively and gently touches his arm, startling him from his reverie. He attempts to rise.
I'm asleep.
She takes his hand to comfort him. In the sick room, Ruth lies exhausted against the pillows, weakly holding a pencil. A nurse lifts her hand and places it on a notepad. Ruth starts to write. The garden at Howard's End. Full-blown rose petals lie scattered on a path. In the meadow, the grass is starred with delicate white and yellow flowers. Snowdrops stand tall beside a stream as gentle rain falls, silently touching the surface of the water. Daffodils toss their heads in the wind. Across the deserted orchard, the house stands bleak and silent. In the dining room, a log is thrown onto the fire. Henry Wilcox sits at the dining table with Evie and Charles and his daughter-in-law, Dolly.
So, to repeat, we have here, forwarded by the matron of the nursing home, sealed and addressed to me, a note purporting to be in your mother's handwriting. And it says, I would like Miss Schlegel, Margaret, to have Howard's End.
Mother never wrote that.
Charles takes the note.
No date. No signature.
Of course. It's a forgery.
A maid comes in.
Not now, please. Later. Thank you. The house was, of course, your mother's to leave to whom she wished.
Let me see it. Well, it's only in pencil. Pencil never counts.
Yes, we know that it is not legally binding, Dolly. We are aware of that. Of course, my dear, we consider you as one of the family. But it will be better if you don't interfere with what you don't understand. Thank you.
The question is whether during the time that this Miss Schlegel managed to befriend my mother...
I don't think it's a case of undue influence. Now, to my mind, the question is the, invalid's condition when the note was written.
My dear father, consult an expert if you wish, but I don't admit that it is my mother's handwriting.
You just said it was.
Never mind if I did.
He lights his pipe.
So we're all agreed then that legally I would be quite justified in tearing this up and throwing it into the fire.
And all else aside, how is this gift to be conveyed to Miss Schlegel? Is she to have a life interest in it, or is she to own it absolutely?
She may be on her way down this very minute to turn us all out.
I don't believe Miss Schlegel knows anything about this whim of your mother's.
Mother believed so in ancestors, she would never have left anything to an outsider.
If Miss Schlegel had been poor, if she had wanted a house... But she has a house. Why shouldn't she want another?
She wouldn't have wanted us to even see this thing.
No. Your poor mother would not have wanted it.
Glancing across at Charles, Evie slowly reaches out and takes the note from her father's hand. She tears it into small pieces. Throwing it into the fire, she looks at them all defiantly. Late at night, Leonard stands on the roof of his flat, gazing upwards. Jackie joins him. She's ready for bed.
Len, you coming in?
In a minute. You're right.
She takes his hand, and they climb a few steps.
What are you looking at?
See that big one up there? It's Ursa Major, Great Bear. You follow those two down about four times, and that one there is the Pole Star. I'm fairly certain that's it.
They all go around that one. Stars.
Jackie, stop it. It's important.
You'll catch your death.
The young man continues to gaze at the stars. The Porphyrion Insurance Company. In a large room with a lofty ceiling and marble columns, Leonard sits at a high desk amongst rows of soberly dressed clerks, busy at their work. He leaves his place to give some papers to a colleague who is serving a customer.
Excuse me, sir. Mr. Kilfoy's policy.
Yes, 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 yes. That's all science. You find me. Thank you.
So may I expect to receive that?
Leonard returns to his seat and briefly balances a pen on his nose, catching it as it falls. He starts to read a book on his desk, then hurriedly marks his place and hides it in a drawer as a supervisor brings him some work.
Could you repeat that?
Yes, of course.
He dips his pen in the inkwell, then slides open the desk drawer. He takes out the book and turns to a star chart, which he traces with his fingers. Lost in a daydream, Leonard sits at his desk in the midst of a sunlit wood.
The trees reared in mighty columns, their tops still radiant in sunlight, which, spilling downward through the wealth of leaves, dissolved at last in the darkness of the mossy earth. Their colour slowly faded from out of the flowers, but their scent lingered to honey the air he breathed.
Now he imagines himself elegantly attired in morning dress and carrying a top hat. He makes his way through the wood, along a grassy path between wild, overgrown hedges. Emerging into a field of nodding bluebells, he strides through the flowers, which stretch before him into the distance. The Schlegel House.
There's a woman to see you, ma'am.
A woman and not a lady, Annie?
She won't give her name.
Well, ask her to come up.
She says she won't come up.
Well, then we shall have to go down.
Jackie stands nervously in the hall downstairs, wearing a pink skirt and a short red cape.
Good afternoon.
I'm looking for my husband.
Here?
Thank you, Annie. I have my reasons to believe that he is here.
You're welcome to search for him, sir.
I'm so sorry. Your husband's name? Leonard Bast, as I'm sure you're aware of.
Margaret, are we concealing a Mr. Leonard Bast? There appears to have been some mistake, Mrs. Bast. I do not think we are acquainted with your husband.
Oh, no. There's no mistake. I know for a fact that he has visited in this house. He had his tea here.
That is a grave allegation.
Yes, to have corrupted a married man with giving him tea.
I wish we could help you, Mrs. Bast. It seems you can't. Or won't. Except to have a laugh at my expense. So I'm very sorry to have troubled you. And wish you a very good afternoon.
You do what you can for the house. The drawing room reeks of smoke.
And if you start smoking too, the house might be even more messy.
I doubt it.
The maid comes in.
Who's your lovely Annie?
There's a Mr. Leonard Bass.
No! I don't believe it.
The Mr. Bass.
I'll do the host.
Thank you.
Mr. Bast, come this way.
Do come in, Mr. Bast. Good evening.
Good evening. Do come in and have some pudding with us.
Yes, or would you prefer some dinner?
I've had my tea, thank you. Glass of wine? No. Port? No, thank you.
Well, do take a seat in any case, Mr. Bast, and let us know how we can help you.
Leonard sits at the table and takes a card from his pocket.
You wouldn't remember giving me this.
Not as
well. That was how it happened, you see.
What?
Where did we meet, Mr. Bast? For the moment, I don't remember.
It was more than a year ago, at the Ethical Society. The lecture was on music and meaning.
Oh, I see. So the mistake arose out of my card, did it? The lady who called here yesterday thought that you were calling as well and that she would find you here.
In the afternoon, I said to Mrs. Bast, I'll have to pay a call on some friends. And Mrs. Bast said to me, do go. But while I was gone, she wanted me on important business and thought I had come here, owing to the card, and I beg to tender my apologies, and hers too, for any inconvenience we may have caused you.
None at all, truly.
I still don't understand. When did you say you paid this call? This afternoon call?
In the afternoon, of course.
Saturday afternoon or Sunday?
Saturday.
Really? And you were still calling on Sunday when your wife came here? A long visit.
It was very good of you to come and explain, Mr. Bast. The rest is naturally no concern of ours. We are going to go upstairs for coffee. I do hope that you will join us.
She gets up.
It's not what you think. I left my office and walked. Right out of London. I was walking all Saturday night.
All night? In the dark?
Got so dark I couldn't see my own hand.
Mr. Bast, you must be a born explorer.
I tried to steer by the pole star, but once out of doors, everything gets so mixed and I lost it.
Don't tell me about the pole star. I know his little ways. It goes round and round and you go round with it.
They take Leonard upstairs. Later, in the sitting room, he touches the handle of a handsome sword which hangs above the fireplace.
Why? Why did you do it?
I wanted to just walk. Just get out. I've been reading The Ordeal of Richard Feverel.
Yes, I remember. There's that chapter where Richard walks all night.
In a forest by moonlight.
Isn't Murray... What's that wonderful...
Oh, I know. I know exactly what you mean.
Yes. The forest drooped glimmeringly.
Wait, I'll get it.
The chapter's called Nature Speaks.
Where do your people come from?
London.
Yes, I know, but I mean before that. They didn't always live in a town.
No, they came from around Shropshire. They worked on the land. They were agricultural labourers.
There, you see? It was ancestral voices calling you.
Helen has found the book.
Yes, here it is. Richard was walking hurriedly. A pale grey light on the skirts of the flying tempest displayed the dawn. Did you see the dawn?
Yes, suddenly it got light.
And was it wonderful?
No. It was only grey. And anyway, by that time I was so tired and so hungry. I didn't know when you're walking you want a breakfast and lunch and tea during the night as well, and all I had was a packet of Woodbines.
Night. In a brightly lit room, the sisters attend a lively discussion group. The participants are all women.
What to do if you just gave him money?
It's not very educational. Much more so than the
I want such crass materialism out of your mouth, Margaret.
Give him money. Let us give Mr. Bass money.
Well, what's the first?
The women start to leave the room and make their way downstairs.
Mr. Bass is a baby. Until he has enough money to do it with. Give Mr. Bass money.
They come out of the front door and disperse along the street.
Yes, well, you worry about the first person. Goodbye. Goodbye.
Margaret goes ahead, then stops and looks back, waiting for Helen to join her. As the sisters make their way along the crowded street, they pass groups of people in evening dress. A man recognises them.
So what do you think is the most important thing in the world, then?
Well, I suppose it is whatever matters to you most.
Like love, for instance.
Yes, like love, for instance, or Oxford or Tibby.
What about you? New Wilcox.
Oh, hello.
Good evening.
Honey.
Good evening.
How nice to see you.
Wonderful. It's nice. Yes. I heard two ladies talking of love.
No, we were continuing a serious discussion.
Yes?
Yes, we belong to a sort of club, which meets once a week to discuss various subjects. How are you? I would have thought that you would be down at Howard's End.
Howard's End is let. We've bought a house in Mayfair.
Yes, Mr. Wilcox, supposing you were a millionaire.
Yes.
Oh, I suppose you are one.
Mm.
We have met a young man who is very poor, and we think sensitive and intelligent, and we wondered, if one was a millionaire, how one could help him.
What's his profession?
He's a clerk in, what was it, Margaret?
The Porphyrion Fire Insurance Company.
Porphyrion?
Yes.
Ah, then, Miss Schlegel. If I were to help your young clerk, I'd advise him to clear out of the Porphyrion with all possible speed.
Why?
Well, this is between friends, you understand, but the Porphyrion is insufficiently reinsured. It'll be in the receiver's hands before Christmas.
Oh,
in other words, it'll smash.
Oh, do you hear? Helen, the Porphyrion will smash.
We'll have to warn Mr. Bass. He'll have to get another place.
I hope he'll get one very quickly.
But rather than wait to make sure...
Yes, decidedly. If I understand, the man who is already in the situation when he applies for work stands much better chance, naturally. And this is letting you into state secrets, of course, but it does affect an employer greatly. Human nature, I'm afraid.
Well, our human nature appears to be quite the other way around. We employ people because they're unemployed. The boot man, for instance.
How did you clean the boots?
Not well.
There you are.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Mr. Wilcox, is it very difficult nowadays for a clerk to get a situation?
Yes, extremely.
I'm so sorry about Howard's End.
Hmm?
I mean that you're not living there. I think I have some idea of how much her house meant to Mrs. Wilcox.
Yes, but to us, the family, it has certain drawbacks.
Would you be able to help our friend, help him to a new situation?
Well, unfortunately, we have very few positions and vacancies. When there is one, of course, always hundreds of applicants.
Of course.
Well, it has been a pleasure.
Yes,
Schlegel?
Indeed.
Miss Schlegel? hope your young clerk finds success.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night. Good night. Well, he was in a hurry to get away, wasn't he?
Drawing thoughtfully on his cigar, Henry Wilcox rejoins his friends. At tea.
Mr. Bast, I fear you may have thought our letter a little odd.
We're not odd, really. We're just over-expressive, that's all.
The more a lady has to say, the better. Ladies brighten every conversation.
Yes, I know. The darlings are regular sunbeams. Let me give you a plate. Your company is the Porphyrion, isn't it? Would you call it a solid concern? Cake, this big one, or one of these little deadlies?
It depends what you mean by solid.
We were told the Porphyrion's a no-go.
A friend of ours did think that it's insufficiently reinsured.
And advised you to clear out.
You can tell your friend that he's wrong.
Oh, good.
Wrong, so to speak.
How, so to speak?
I mean, I wouldn't say he was right altogether.
Then he is right partly.
Tell your friend to mind his own business.
Annie.
Mr. Wilcox, Miss Wilcox.
What a surprise.
They have with them two puppies.
I shan't come again.
I call that a very rude remark. What do you want to turn on me like that for?
I thought you invited me here for a friendly chat. Instead, it turns out you want to pick my brains about my place of business. Oh, yes, send for him. Cross-question him. Pick his brains.
No, no.
Are we including Miss Schlegel? Shall we go?
No, no. Thank you. Helen, go on. Explain.
Leonard hurries downstairs and collects his coat. Helen follows and leans over the banister.
What was all that about?
I knew I shouldn't have come. It was all right last time, but things like that always get spoiled.
Things do, but people don't. Don't you understand? We really did want to warn you about the Porphyrion. We were worried about you.
Why should you worry about me?
Because we like you. That's why. You noodle.
There's no cause to call a person names.
Oh, yes, there is, when a person is being tremendously stupid.
Oh, listen, this is serious. Our friend said you should be looking around for another post now, before anything happens. Will you?
I'll think about it.
No, you must do more than think. You must search for another place while you still have one. I promise you will do that at least. Please.
She touches his arm.
All right. Thank you, Miss Schlegel.
Come and tell us when you found another place. Or just come anyway. Don't say no. Don't dare to say no. And don't forget your umbrella or you'll say we pinched it.
He gives a little smile as he takes it from her.
Be more careful, Miss Schlegel. The servants ought to have orders not to let such people in.
Oh, but we invited him in.
What?
Yes, we wanted to see him again and talk to him and maybe help him. Not only in a practical way.
You're too kind. You behave too well to people and then they impose on you. I know the world in that type of man.
Oh, but he is not a type, Mr. Wilcox. No, I think he is a quite unusual young man and he has something in him. I don't know what it is, except that he wants something better than he's got.
Oh.
Yes. He has a sort of romantic ambition.
It is your view of him that is romantic, Miss Schlegel.
Henry puts down his cup and saucer.
Evie, we wish you to have something to remember Mrs. Wilcox by, in return for your kindness to her in those days.
Oh, thank you so much. What a lovely thought. Thank you.
She would want you to have it. She spoke very fondly of you.
It's beautiful. Are you sure?
A small bottle.
Is it 18th century? It must be crystal. Thank you, Evie.
At a restaurant.
So what does she look like?
Sort of an old maid type. Goodness knows why Father wanted me to ask her. She talks and talks. Here she is.
Miss Schlegel?
Hello, Miss Wilcox.
How do you do? This is my fiancé, Percy Cargill.
How do you do?
Mr. Cargill.
Henry greets them.
Ah, good afternoon.
I didn't expect to see you.
Leedy told me of a little part, so I just slipped in and secured a table. Always secure a table first. Evie, sit there. Schlegel, if you please. Yeah?
Thank you very
much. Mr. Yeah? Well, are you still worrying around after your young clerks? I hope you're hungry.
Thank you.
famished. I want to eat heaps.
Good. What do you have?
Fish pie.
Ah, fish pie. That's coming from Fish Pie to Simpsons. It's not a bit the thing to go for here.
Go for something for me, then.
Right. Roast beef and Yorkshire pudding and...
What will you
cider
have?
To drink. That's the type of thing to go for.
I'm proud.
Yes, I like this place. What a joke, once in a way. It's so thoroughly old English. Don't you agree?
The carver slices some beef at the table.
I began an inventory of our possessions. There are over 300 things in the drawing room alone. Oh, thank you. Lovely. And that's not counting the books. Whatever shall I do? You see, the modern ownership of movables
is reducing us again to a nomadic horde. We are reverting to a civilization of luggage, Mr. Wilcox.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Always tip the carver. Tip everywhere's my motto.
Perhaps it does make life more human.
Yes, then these fellows remember one again. Especially in the East. If you tip, they remember you from year's end to year's end.
Have you been in the East?
Yes, Greece and the Levant. I used to go for sport and business to Cyprus. A few piastres properly distributed help to keep one's memory green.
How shockingly cynical.
Not a bit. Simply realistic.
Excuse me, sir. How would you like your pizza?
Well done.
Well done.
Cheese is served.
You don't like cheese. You never take cheese.
Percy, I adore cheese.
You said you didn't like it.
That's the most despicable lie, Percy.
It's not a lie.
You know it. You've gone quite pink.
I haven't gone pink.
Yes, you have. Your ears have gone slightly pink about the tips.
Evie, I have not. Evie, I like that. Miss Dagley expects me to act as a sound agent for her.
I want a new home in September, and someone must find it. I can't. Do you know of anything, Percy?
Can't say I do.
I wish you would give us Howards End.
Evie glances at Henry.
Howards End, I'm afraid, is let.
Can't you turn out your tenant and let it to us?
No.
We're nearly demented. Mr. Wilcox, I am demented.
One bit of advice. Fix your district, then fix your price, then don't budge. That's how I got Ducie Street and on it. Well, I shall look around a bit for you.
Would you?
Yes.
Would you really?
Yes.
Oh, how kind. But I warn you, the house has not been built that would suit the Schlegel family.
Mm-hmm.
It's no fun trying to help us.
Fun? No, but it's a pleasure and a privilege to do whatever I can for Miss Margaret Schlegel.
Thank you very much.
A letter.
Dear Miss Schlegel, dare I intrude on your holiday in Devon and request you to come up to London, where I may add you are greatly missed. Matter is of some urgency.
But to interrupt your holiday, dear Margaret, and before we have undertaken any of our excursions, you haven't even been to Nine Barrows Down.
I know, Aunt Julie, but I shall be back before long. Let me go up to town today and take the house if it's the least bit possible.
I don't understand. Whose house is this?
Mr. Wilcox's, Tibby. You are being remarkably obtuse. Are you doing it on purpose? Look, owing to changed circumstances, he means that Evie's getting married. It's his daughter. I no longer have need for a London house of this size, and I'm willing to let it on a yearly tenancy. Now, it's perfect.
Out of all our hotel acquaintances, Mr. Wilcox is the only one who's stuck, and yet we've met far more interesting people.
Interesting people don't get one houses.
I shall never forget their dreadful motor drive with their perfectly dreadful Charles. My one consolation is that for once I was able to be useful to you girls.
Thank you, Aunt Julie. And now it is my turn to be useful.
A London street. A horse-drawn carriage passes a very large red brick house. Inside the house, Henry Wilcox walks with Margaret down an ornate staircase. As she pauses to look up at tall windows with stained glass panels, he hurries past her to the floor below. She follows him. He opens a heavy door.
This is the ballroom.
Goodness.
Oh. Like it?
Proper. Even I know a good thing when I see it.
She continues downstairs.
Yes, but nowadays, with Evie always out with her fiancé, when I get home in the evenings, I tell you I can't stand the place.
It would be very lonely for you.
Yes. Do you ever get lonely, Miss Schlegel?
I soon shall, horribly. It's heartbreaking to leave one's old home.
She stops and looks up.
Goodness, how high this ceiling must be.
Hmm? Yes, it must be over 30 feet. No, maybe 40, I should think. Perhaps even more. I'm Miss Schlegel. I've had you up here on false pretenses. I want to speak on a much more serious matter than the house. Do you think you could be induced to share? I mean, is it at all probable that...
Oh, yes, I see.
He walks down to join her.
Miss Schlegel. Margaret. I don't think you quite understand.
Oh, yes. Indeed, yes.
I'm asking you to be my wife.
Yes, I know. I know.
Are you offended?
How could I be?
Well, perhaps I should have written first.
No, rather you will receive a letter from me.
Thank you.
Not at all. And it's you I thank.
Should I order the motor round now?
That will be most kind.
She slowly walks back up the stairs towards him, and after a moment, gently kisses him. He watches as she calmly collects her hat and gloves from the hall table at the foot of the stairs. Charles's garden.
I am warning you, Evie, she will never set foot in this house.
It's not my fault.
Of course it's your fault. Going around hobnobbing with those Schlegel girls.
Girls? They're hardly girls. I never dreamt of such a thing. Dad took me to call and then made me ask her to Simpson's, that's all. Well, I'm altogether off, Dad.
You work in Diddums. I knew you would.
Well, Miss Schlegel's fairly got us on toast. You know, she always meant to get hold of Howard's End. Now, thanks to you, she's got it.
I call that most unfair. Oh, Evie, why don't you pretend to break off your engagement? Well, then perhaps your father will also quarrel with Miss Schlegel.
Stop talking nonsense, Dolly.
I'm jolly well going to get married as soon as possible. And Dad can do what he likes.
He's taking my mother's place. The idea.
I could simply scratch that woman's eyes out.
Come on, Dolly. I'll have a try.
He takes the baby.
Well, it's no use talking. You're in a bad hole and must make the best of it. But I'll keep my eye on those Schlegels. And if I find them putting on airs, you know, with an artistic beastliness, I intend to put my foot down. Yes. Firmly.
Devon. A mist from the sea rises around Aunt Julie's house. Helen is reading a letter. Her aunt has been painting.
I've had a letter too. Not a nice one. I want to talk it over with you. My letter's about Howard's End. The tenants have decamped.
One?
And what is worse, is trying to sublet the house, Margaret. Yeah, he's trying to sublet the house. What are you laughing at?
Henry. Hmm? You haven't had a chance for a talk with Helen yet, have you, I suppose?
What do you mean, a talk with her?
Well, do before you go.
Why, what's the matter?
Because, no, nothing. I'm just anxious you two should be friends.
We've always hit it off together. Shh. Well, we do. There's no clause in the agreement. Allow subletting. There you are. Read it yourself. It's awfully jolly.
Thank you.
Yes, especially that. Foxgloves.
Yes, dear old digitalis.
Digitalis. Sounds like a sneeze.
In the garden.
Margaret! Such nice news from Mr. Bass!
Really?
Good.
Here we all are, then. Mr. Bass is now with Dempster's Bank. That's his news.
Good.
Oh. Thanks to your hint, he cleared out of the Porphyrian.
Not a bad business, the Porphyrian. Margaret, I shall have to go to Howard's End and take charge, and I would like you to come with me.
What a bad business.
Yes, I would like that very much.
Good. What about tomorrow?
Tomorrow? Oh, no. I couldn't well do that.
Why not?
You told us the Porphyrian was smashed before Christmas.
Did I? Yes. Well, it was outside the tariff ring at the time. Took some rather bad policies. But lately it came in. Safe as houses now. What's wrong with tomorrow?
Well, Aunt Julie would be so disappointed if I left
now. Didn't Mr. Wilcox clearly tell us that the Porphyrian
was... Yes, let's talk about it later, shall we? Henry, Aunt Julie regards this visit.
And now it turns out that it's safe as houses, and Mr. Bassley never have left and taken another post at a greatly reduced salary.
My dear Helen, I grieve for your clerk, I really do. But it is all part of the battle of life.
Battle of life?
Yes.
A man who had little money has less, owing to us.
Oh, come, you're not to blame. No one is to blame.
No one? Is no one to blame for anything?
I didn't say that.
You take things far too seriously. There's your aunt. I'm going to have a word with her.
Helen.
Helen, word of advice.
I require no more advice.
Don't take up a sentimental attitude over the poor. See that she doesn't, Margaret. The poor are poor. One is sorry for them, but there it is. I'll talk to Aunt Julie by tomorrow. Don't you bother.
I'm very sorry about Mr. Bass, but you must be civil to him.
You yourself are a witness.
Yes, I know. There may be another side to this question. But Henry is my future husband, and I must be on his side. Why are you so bitter, dear?
Because I'm an old maid.
Oh, Helen. Oh, darling.
Helen runs towards the house.
Helen!
As Margaret follows, she meets Aunt Julie and Henry.
Margaret, Nancy. Yes. It isn't true, surely, what Mr. Wilcox is saying, that you want to go away tomorrow.
Yes, I must leave tomorrow. I have business at Hard's End, and my business is now also, unfortunately, my Margaret.
Inside the house, Helen screws up Leonard's letter. Angry and upset, she watches through a window as Margaret and Henry walk arm in arm across the windswept garden. The Imperial and West African Rubber Company, Chairman H. Wilcox.
Yes, that's
so this is the famous office.
What?
I'd expected something more African.
Heavens, no.
Spears.
Yes.
And animal skins and that sort of thing. But I suppose that this is the Imperial part of the Imperial and West African Rubber Company.
Yes, we still haven't settled the question of the London house, have we?
Well, it all depends, doesn't it?
On what?
When do you want to marry me?
How you do fly around my heads in a whirl. Let's dance!
As he twirls her round, Charles joins them from the outer office.
I hope that my wife... Oh, how do you do? We'll give you a decent lunch after you've had a good look at Hard's End.
Oh, I can hardly wait to see it, although I almost feel I have.
I don't know in what state you'll find it. The tenant decamped without even arranging for a charwoman to clear up after him.
Oh, dear.
Yes. I've more than a little bone to pick with that, Hens. Margaret, here's an idea.
Yes.
Why don't we use Hard's End to store your furniture from Wickham Place till you decide what to do with it?
Oh, would you? Would you really?
Good idea.
Oh, how kind. Only until Helen and Tibby are settled, of course, Charles.
I hope you won't be disappointed. It's quite a measly little place. It really suited us.
Heavens, no.
Hilton. An open-topped car brings Margaret, Henry and Dolly to Howard's End. It turns in at the gate. As the chauffeur applies the brakes, Henry opens the car door. He climbs out and helps Margaret down. Dolly opens her purse.
Oh, dear.
What?
I seem to have forgotten the keys.
What?
I've lost the keys.
Train will have to go back.
Oh. Yeah. Well, won't you leave me here?
Sure?
Yes, yes, I'll wait for you. Dolly, have a nice glass of milk at the farm. I think you need... Henry, see that she gets a nice glass of milk.
I'm so sorry.
I'll go back to the garden.
Come on, Chris.
Dolly looks at Henry nervously.
Goodbye.
Why did you pick up the key?
I'm sorry, I don't know, sir.
Where did you leave it?
Well, it could be with didn't.
I know.
The chauffeur backs the car out of the drive. Margaret walks slowly around the outside of the house. Approaching a low window, she stoops to peer in through the dusty panes. She walks along the path and, reaching up to pull down a branch of wisteria, buries her face in the purple blooms. At the porch, she touches the door, which swings open unexpectedly. She steps into the house. Inside, the bare, low-ceilinged rooms are empty of carpets and furniture. A discarded tea chest stands in the middle of the dusty wooden floor. Sunlight streams through the uncurtained windows. As she enters the now deserted dining room, there's a noise above her head. Startled, she looks up, then goes out to the foot of the stairs.
Hello?
An elderly woman stands there.
I took you for Ruth Wilcox.
I like Mrs. Wilcox.
You have her way of walking. Round the house.
The woman smiles at her, then leaves the house, pulling her shawl around her shoulders as she hurries away. Looking puzzled, Margaret follows her outside, but the woman has gone. She stands for a moment looking around the garden, then glances up into the canopy of a magnificent horse chestnut tree as the wind scatters its white blossoms. She walks around the tree and searches for something among the knotted strands of ivy twisted about the ancient trunk.
Henry! Henry! Henry, I've found the teeth!
Here's what?
The pig's teeth!
Teeth where?
The pig's teeth! In the bark! Yes, look! Just here. You see?
Hmm.
4 feet up.
How extraordinary.
Yes, and you chew the bark to cure the toothache.
What a rum notion.
Surely you knew that.
Did that silly old Miss Avery give you a fright, Margaret? None of you girls has any nerve.
Did you take her for a spook? She's very odd. She carries on as if she owned Howards End.
Well, Miss Avery has always lived on the place.
Oh, yes, she grew up there on the farm, like Mrs. Wilcox. Weren't she and Mrs. Wilcox friends when Howards End too was a farm? Oh, and they do say that Mrs. Wilcox had a brother, or was it an uncle? Anyhow, he popped the question, and Miss Avery, she said no. Just imagine if she'd said yes, she'd have been Charles's aunt. I say that's rather good. Charlie's aunt. I must chaff him about that. She's so mad about Howards End. Goodness knows what she'll do when your furniture gets there, Margaret. She might fling it all out. Or she might simply adopt it for Howards End.
Margaret's belongings arrive at Howards End and are carried inside and arranged around the house. A small boy, Tom, helps Miss Avery to unroll a carpet, then carefully carries a china bust and lifts it onto a wooden pedestal. Books are placed neatly on a shelf. A metal chest is opened to reveal the handsome sword which hung in the Schlegel sitting room. Miss Avery draws it from the scabbard. She moves the sword out of Tom's reach as he puts out his hand admiringly to touch the blade. A banking hall. Leonard Bast removes his bowler as he crosses the floor towards the reception desk.
Excuse me, sir. Where would I go to inquire about a position?
What position would that be, sir? I heard there was one. Not at this time.
The man looks at him disapprovingly. As Leonard turns despondently away, he is noticed by Helen, who is standing at the counter. She looks at him uncertainly for a moment before she recognizes him. As he turns to leave, she walks towards him and shakes his hand.
I thought it was you. How do you do?
Why did you never come to see us again? You promised. But this isn't your bank. You took a situation with Dempster's. Sorry?
I lost the situation. They cut back on their staff, and the last to join, like me, were the first to be let go. I've been inquiring for another place here. The way they look at you when you come to ask. They're sure you've stolen something, or why else would any decent person be out of work?
It's our fault.
No.
No, we made you leave the Porphyrion, I and my sister and Mr. Wilcox, who is at this very moment celebrating his daughter's wedding. It is castle in Shropshire with a maximum expense and ostentation, of course. I could murder him.
Murder without. It is most foul. Now, how have you been, Miss Schlegel? Any interesting
lectures? You know, he jolly well owes you a situation.
A house in Shropshire.
What nice houses you have all over the place. I like this one, too.
On the Grange. Waiting to get it off my hands.
Why?
Well, what does one to do? The shooting is bad and the fishing is even worse. Anyway, it's in the wrong part of Shropshire.
Portraits.
Henry, are these all Wilcoxes?
Heavens, no. But I bought the place lock, stock and barrel. The fellow just took the money and cleared off to Italy, I think. I'm told some of these are rather good. What do you think?
I think they're lovely.
Rather good, isn't it?
Which one?
Topper.
Yes, very grand. Rather like you.
So, I show you the cellar.
She touches a wall.
It's very damp, isn't it?
Servants in shirt sleeves get up from around a table as Henry and Margaret walk through.
You have enough ice now?
Yes.
Second orders?
Yes.
Good.
All right. Afternoon.
Hello. This way.
Henry pushes aside four rabbits hanging from the ceiling.
It is difficult to decide what to do about the children. Yes, here we are.
The wine cellar.
Now, Charles is the eldest, will someday have Howard, I'm just anxious not to be unjust to the others.
Of course not. You mean money?
Yes, money, since you put it so frankly.
Goodness. We'll never get through all this wine. Oh. Well, how much have you got?
What?
How much have you got a year? I have 600.
My income?
Don't you know your income?
Of course I do.
Well, don't you want to tell it me? No, do it this way. If you were to divide your income into 10 parts, how many parts would you give to Charles, how many to Evie, and how many to Paul? Go ahead, give away all you can. Be generous.
Don't be divided by the to you. No.
Wearing an evening gown, Margaret strolls towards castle ruins in the grounds of Henry's house. Dolly and Charles stand beneath a stone archway. He lights his pipe.
Now I suppose she'll get her hands on this place as well as Howards End.
It's only her furniture that's gone there.
No, that's the thin edge of the wedge.
Odd what's to happen to us, Dolly. Two children to bring up.
Charles, you're pleased about baby, aren't you?
What?
Oh, pleased as punch. Pleased as punch.
They embrace.
But it's not going to be easy. The pater wants to be fair, but money isn't elastic. What if Evie has a family? Will the pater himself? What?
They freeze, then crouch down as Margaret comes into the ruins.
Who's there? Saxon or Celt?
Evie stands in an open car, festooned with white ribbons, and throws her bouquet towards the wedding guests. As she and Percy are driven away, a crowd of young men hang on the car until the last moment. Margaret and Henry walk together.
Went like clockwork. Quite like a Durbar, Lady Edza said.
Ah. You did awfully well. Very proud of you. Thank you. It's very successful. Who are those people?
Well, perhaps they're townspeople come to see the wedding presents. If you'll gracefully vanish, I'll deal with them.
Leonard Bast and Jackie stand uncomfortably out of place in Henry's garden. Margaret sees that Helen is with them.
What is it? What's wrong? Is Tibby ill?
They're starving. I found them starving.
Who is starving?
The Basts.
Helen. He has lost his place because he's been turned out of Dancer's Bank. They reduced their staff and he was the first to go. Yes, thanks to us. He's done for. We've ruined him.
Are you mad?
What? You like, I'm mad, but I'll stand for this no longer. Two people starving and meanwhile, all this vulgar show.
Margaret draws her discreetly away across the lawn.
Helen, have you actually brought two starving people from London to Shropshire?
There was a restaurant car on the train.
Don't be absurd.
I won't have such theatrical nonsense. How dare you? Yes, how dare you? Bursting into Evie's wedding in this way. My goodness. But you've a perverted notion of philanthropy. Look at them. They think it's some vulgar scandal. And I must explain. Oh, no. It's only my sister screaming and only two hangers-on of ours whom she has brought here for no conceivable reason.
We want to see Mr. Wilcox.
Margaret goes to Leonard.
Mr. Bast, this is an odd business. What view do you take of it? There is Mrs. Bast, too.
Yes, how do you do?
How do you do?
She's not well. She fainted on the train.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Won't you sit down for a minute?
I'm sure we don't wish to intrude, but you have been so kind in the past, you and your sister.
Look, my sister has got you in a false position, I'm afraid, Mr. Bast.
No,
please, Helen, offer them something. Mrs. Bast, please, won't you have something to eat? Please.
Leonard reluctantly agrees, and putting his arm around Jackie, leads her away.
Now, Helen, I would like to do something for them, because I agree we are in some way responsible.
Via Mr. Wilcox.
Let me tell you once and for all that if you take up that attitude, I'll do nothing, so choose. If you promise to take them to the hotel quietly as my guests, then I will speak to Henry about finding work for Mr. Bast. In my own way, mind, there is to be no more of this absurd screaming. Well, all right.
I promise.
Very well. Take them up to the George then and I'll try. But Helen, you have been most self-indulgent. You have less restraint rather than more as you get older. Think it over, Helen. And alter yourself, or we shan't have happy lives.
Helen walks away stubbornly. She finds Jackie and takes her hand.
Let's eat some cake, shall we?
She leads her into a marquee. Leonard follows them. Helen cuts a piece of cake. Jackie helps herself to a plate of fruit and sits down as Helen puts a glass of champagne in front of her.
Sorry, excuse me.
Now I'm a seat getting some rooms.
No, we don't want to be in any trouble. We should come with you.
Lame.
Perhaps you'd like to stay.
Look, there's all this pudding.
Mrs. Bassett is extremely tired.
I'm hungry.
Perhaps you should come back for her.
Well, will you be all right?
I'll be all right.
Helen leads Leonard away, leaving Jackie alone at the table. She sips her champagne. A guest at the next table beckons the wine waiter, who refills his glass. Jackie looks around her with pleasure. Playing the lady, she nibbles a piece of cake, then licks her fingers delicately and takes another sip of champagne. Dolly looks out of a window.
Charles. Charles.
Where?
Charles walks out of the house and crosses to the marquee. He stops in front of Jackie.
Charles Wilcox, how do you do? Bridal groom?
She stares at him blankly.
We're very pleased to have made your acquaintance.
She lifts her spoon.
Champagne, ma'am?
Indoors.
Helen? Not here?
But, she refused the invitation. I thought she despised weddings. Where is she now?
She's gone now. I've bundled her off to the George.
George Hotel?
Mm.
Well, you shouldn't have done that.
Well, she has two of her protégés with her.
Ah, yes, a protégé. Well, let them all come.
No, but, later on, I would like to talk to you about them.
Well, why not now? No time like the present.
Shall I?
Hmm. Yes, if it isn't too long a story.
It's not 5 minutes.
Yeah.
There's a sting at the end of it.
Hmm.
For I want you to find the man some work in your office.
Charles listens at the door.
Oh. What are his qualifications?
He's a clerk, I think.
Yes. Where was he before?
Dempster's Bank.
Dempster's? Why did he leave?
They reduced their staff.
Oh. Yes, All right, I'll see what I can do.
Charles creeps away.
Margaret, This cannot be taken as a precedent, you know. I can't fit in your protégés or Helen's protégés every day. You do understand?
Of course. Of course not. He's rather a special case.
Yes, well, protégés always are, aren't they? Hmm.
Outside in the marquee, Jackie fills her glass from a silver punch bowl. As she walks unsteadily towards the wedding cake and cuts herself another slice, she sees Henry and Margaret crossing the lawn towards her after saying goodbye to their guests.
Why, if it isn't Henry. Hello, Henry. Fancy seeing you here.
This is Mrs. Bast. Sorry, she's a little overtired.
She's drunk.
Don't you remember Jackie? Henry, aren't you going to say hello?
Do you know Mrs. Bast?
No, I don't.
No, Henry. Who doesn't know Henry?
Henry.
We've had some gay old times, haven't we, Hen?
He hurries away.
Henry. Henry. Henry.
You're satisfied now, Margaret. I can now understand your keen interest in the best. I must say I congratulate you on your little plan to trap me.
Trap you?
I release you from your engagement.
Henry.
Thank you.
Henry! Henry!
He runs away from her across the lawn. Later, Margaret holds a wedding guest's coat.
Oh, please don't bother, my dear. No. I'm sure I can manage. I can find them.
I do.
So that's it.
That is what? Thank you. Thank you, dear chap. You were saying?
No, nothing. Henry and I were just having the fiercest argument, but I think he has forgiven me.
Oh, I don't expect there's much to forgive.
No.
Well, I really must be going, or we shall be late.
He goes outside.
Lovely time. And hasn't the weather been kind to us?
Sure is.
A lovely day. Well, thank you, my dear.
He gets into his car.
Thank you. Bye-bye, darling. Bless
bye-bye,
you.
Albert.
You take
bye-bye.
Care of yourself.
Bye-bye, bye-bye, Mrs. Sweetman.
Oh, I've forgotten my hat.
It's right. It's here, Father.
Oh. Ah, thank you, Albert.
Same journey.
Ah, the women folk are all right there. Yes. I've shut the doors and we're all ready. Well, thank you, drive on, then.
As Dolly waves to the departing car, Margaret walks back into the house and up the stairs. Hurrying into a sitting room, she unpins her hat and falls to her knees in front of a long mirror. She gazes tearfully at her reflection in the glass. She covers her mouth with both hands to stifle her grief. In the garden, Leonard leads Jackie away from the curious servants.
What's the matter, Jackie?
The joke. Seen him.
Him? Seen who?
I don't want to talk about it.
What do you think you're looking at?
The drawing room. Margaret finds Henry winding a clock.
Henry, look at me.
He ignores her and sits down.
So, you were that woman's lover?
Did you put it with your usual delicacy? Yes, I was.
When? When, please?
10 years ago. I'm sorry, 10 years ago.
He shields his face.
Henry, dear. It's not going to trouble us.
He paces the room.
Oh, yes, we fellas all. Paul from Grace, once in our time. Do you believe that, Margaret?
Yes, I do believe it.
You with your refined pursuits and your books, what can you guess of any man's life? Temptations. Temptations. Well, that's enough. I've spoken too much already.
Yes, that's enough, dear.
It was in Cyprus. It was very lonely. You can never forgive me, can you?
I have forgiven you, Henry.
Well, I could find an excuse, but I won't.
Let us speak no more about it, dear. It is all behind us.
Really? You can really bring yourself to forgive me?
She holds out her hand towards him. They sit together.
You've learned that I'm far from a saint. In fact, the reverse.
No,
no, no, no, no. The reverse. Where are those people now?
Helen has taken them to the George.
Oh. Then let them leave first thing in the morning, because there must be no gossip of the George. And, well, anyway, Helen should be here with us, not stopping at a hotel with some ragtags. Tell you what, Margaret, why didn't you kindly write a note to that effect, and I'll have Burton send it over to Helen straight away. Burton! Burton!
Yes, sir.
I want you to take a note to the George Hotel straight away.
Yes, sir.
There's far too much noise up there.
Margaret sits at a desk and begins to write.
I'm sorry to tell you that Henry can do nothing for Mr. Bast. He feels the Basts are not at all the type we should trouble about.
Helen reads the letter in the lounge of the George Hotel.
We found the woman drunk on the lawn. Please see that they leave first thing in the morning and come here yourself.
He made her write it. This isn't Margaret. Would you put it in the fire?
She gives it to Leonard, who is standing beside the hearth. He feeds it into the flames and they both watch it burn.
You better let us be, Miss Schlegel. You don't want to get mixed up in this.
Mixed up in what? What is it? You must trust me that far, at least.
She leans forward and takes his hand.
Mr. Wilcox met Jackie before, out in Cyprus when she was 16. I told you didn't want to hear about it.
Go on. Why was she in Cyprus?
Her father was a clerk in an export business, so after her mother died, she'd gone out to be with him. Then he died. Accidentally drowned because he couldn't swim. Jackie was left having to fend for herself till she managed to get back home.
For a moment, Helen stares at him. Then she looks pensively away into the fire. A dull day by the river. Helen is sitting in a rowing boat. Leonard pushes it away from the bank. Dressed in her underclothes, Jackie sadly watches them from a bedroom window at the George Hotel. Helen leans back in the boat as Leonard rows.
I didn't have to marry, but I did. My family wouldn't have anything to do with this. They tried to stop me, but I married her all the same. Because I promised. Miss Nevan, where would you be today after the Mr. Wilcoxes of this world had finished with it?
It would never, never, not in a thousand years, enter that man's mind that he'd done anything wrong. Because there's nothing here.
Head.
And nothing here.
Heart.
And you're the opposite. You believe in personal responsibility and personal everything.
Very nice. What good am I to myself or to Jackie? Marrying her only to pull her down with me so we can starve together.
You'll find another position somewhere, surely you will.
You don't know what you're talking about. If rich people fail at one profession, they can try another. But with us, once a man over 20 loses his own particular job, he's done for.
I'd do anything in the world to help you.
Well, help me row then. I'm tired.
Helen smiles and stands up. As she moves precariously along the boat, he takes her hand and helps her to sit on the seat beside him. They each take an oar and start to row.
You're the one person who ever has helped me.
You mean by passing on false information to make you give up your job?
I mean by being the sort of person you are. I didn't think people like you existed except in books. And books aren't real.
Oh, no, they're more real than anything. When people fail you, there's still music and meaning.
That's for rich people, to make them feel good after their dinner.
The oars are still.
Everything's got spoiled for you, hasn't it?
She touches his cheek. He grasps her hand and kisses it. Then, putting his arms around her, pulls her towards him and buries his face in her shoulder. She presses herself against him, kissing him passionately, as the river carries the boat onward. It drifts towards the bank and disappears beneath the overhanging branches of a willow tree. Tibby's rooms at Oxford. He is eating a meal.
Don't know what's to be done, Tibby. Or what to say to Meg. Don't want to face her or even to go back to Wickham Place.
You mean because of Mr. Wilcox and the woman you say he seduced in between growing currants in Cyprus?
I want you to give Meg my love and tell her. Tell her I'm going away to Germany. To Munich. Or else Bonn.
Such a message is easily given. God, I wish I could escape from Meg's wedding, too.
You're really going to go through with it? How is it possible for our Meg to be a Wilcox? And now, after all this?
You'd much better go away to Jenny. There's Martha with the apple Charlotte. Do you mind if I take it from him? It spoils the waiter. Ah, Margaret.
Shall I clear now?
Not now. Later.
Thank you very much.
I feel... No, I know. We owe the Bass some compensation.
Oh, those people again.
Yes, those people again. Don't see who is to pay if I don't. I'm placing what I consider is a minimum amount to your account. And when I'm in Germany, you'll pay it over to the Bass for me. She'll never forget your kindness, Tibbikins, if you do this.
What's the sum?
5,000.
Good God.
It's useless just giving out driblets of charity, just shillings and blankets. No doubt people will think me mad.
I don't give a damn what people think. But I do mind if you ruin yourself for some quixotic reason of your own.
Didn't expect you to understand me.
I understand nobody.
But you'll do it.
Apparently.
Smiling, Helen eats a spoonful of her brother's apple charlotte. In Leonard's shabby flat, Jackie scrubs at some washing.
Are you writing to your brother? He could send us another 10.
Yes, and a long lecture to go with it.
My sister could afford a fiver.
Leave me alone!
She turns from the sink.
Why are you taking out on me?
You can see I'm busy, can't you?
He blows on his letter to dry the ink. Walking in the cloisters of his college, Tibby opens an envelope.
Dear Mr. Schlegel, I acknowledge receipt of your letter dated 2nd of October enclosing a cheque for £5,000. I am very grateful for your concern, but having no immediate necessity, I have the honour to return your cheque herewith. Yours sincerely, Leonard Best.
The Porphyrion.
Excuse me, sir. Sorry to bother you. I worked in this office for 4 years. I was wondering if there were any vacancies at the moment.
No, I'm sorry. I've nothing.
Nothing at all?
Nothing. Nothing at this time.
Your time. Thank
you. In a somber registrar's office, a small group of people watch as Henry and Margaret sign the marriage certificate. For her wedding, Margaret wears a simple brown suit with a fur collar and carries a small bouquet which Tibby holds for her as she takes the pen. Her brother hands back the flowers and signs his own name as witness, then slides the book along the table to Charles. A bedroom. Henry shows Margaret an architect's drawing as he sits on the edge of a double bed.
At the servants will have the benefit of the central heating if we keep them here,
mm-hmm.
instead of at the back of the house. Yeah. That's what the architect proposed.
Oh, if only it would hurry up and get itself built.
All in good time.
Mm. I'm getting tired of living in London.
Are you?
Yes, I can't be as young as I was.
Yeah.
So I'm perfectly happy to do without all the new plays and discussion societies.
Mr. Shaw, Mr. Wells, and all your utopias.
It's what I miss, are trees and mountains and meadows.
Yes.
I also miss my own things.
Safe enough to house, Anne.
And of course, I'm very grateful to have them there. But I would so like to see everything in our own home. My share, at least. Goodness only knows what Tibby intends to do with his.
Oh, Helen. It's been another postcard from her. Still the same post-restant address in Bavaria, but now she speaks of going to Italy.
She's never coming back to England. And she's been away now how long has it been?
It will be 4 months and 3 weeks on Tuesday.
Yeah. Your sister is odd. She always has been. There's no getting away from it.
He finds a book.
What's this? Now, what's it been reading now?
Theosophy.
Oh, yes. Madame Blavatsky. Now, what a clever little woman it is. You see, that's what I mean about Helen. She reads these things and her mind gets addled. I'm Margaret. She keeps her facts straight.
What facts are those, dear?
About men and women and all that sort of thing. Who is who and what is what.
He shows an illustration.
Yes. And what is that?
Mr. Schlegel, sir. You've forgotten these.
Ah, thank you, Mark.
Thank you, sir.
Tibby takes his post and finds a postcard from Italy amongst his letters. Margaret reached the post at the Schlegel house.
Ah. Oh, dear Annie. Look, it's another one.
The maid takes the postcard.
And no letter.
Margaret carries Tibby's mortarboard as he reads a postcard from Germany.
See, I just can't feel that Helen's really alive. These postcards and telegrams don't seem to have come from her. That's not her.
I know what you mean. You'll break that if you keep fiddling with it.
Well, I put it on.
Oh!
A telegram.
M.J. Schlegel, The Rise, Stoke Fleming, Devon. Dearest Meg, arriving London Thursday. Please telegraph Care My Bank whether Aunt Julie is better or likely to become worse. Give my love to the invalid and keep some for yourselves. Helen.
Devon.
If only you had a companion to take your walks with.
I have Tibby, dear Aunt Julie. And it won't be long, thank you, Maggie, before you'll be up and about.
When is Helen coming?
Very soon, dear. She will already have reached London.
As the maid leaves the room, Tibby appears at the door carrying Helen's telegram. He draws Margaret aside.
Yes, but she says to telegraph if Aunt Julie is better. Obviously, if we want to see her, we must telegraph that she is not better.
We can't start lying to each other. Tell him, will you? She couldn't stay away at such a time.
Looking anxiously at Aunt Julie, Tibby ushers his sister out of the room.
Dearest Helen, Aunt Julie better and eagerly expecting you, as am I, your Meg.
Must return Germany at once. Telegraph to bank whereabouts our books and furniture. Helen.
And why did she have to go back to Germany?
I'll explain it all to you after your nap, dear.
She might have come to see her old aunt. I haven't been well, you know. Is cook doing the mackerel the way Tibby likes them? I know his whole day is spoiled if his breakfast isn't right.
The mackerel were perfect. In fact, Tibby particularly mentioned them this morning. Don't tell me, Tibby, that it is still that business over Henry and that woman, Mrs. Bass. Goodness me! How morbid! His wife forgives him and his sister-in-law cannot bear to look upon his face. I don't believe it. Not even of Helen.
We all know to what extremes Helen goes. We've all suffered under her temperament.
But this is different. This is not temperament, but a kind of madness. As if she were mad.
London. Margaret and Tibby are in Henry's office.
Margaret, got black marks again under your eyes. You know that's strictly forbidden, don't you? I'd have my girl looking as old as her husband.
You haven't quite seen our point.
No, I don't suppose I ever shall.
Our point is this. Our sister may be mad.
Well, Charles, do come in. We are again in trouble. Can you help us at all?
No, I'm afraid I cannot. What were the facts?
We're all mad, more or less, you know, these days.
The facts are that our sister has been in England for 3 days and won't see us. She's forbidden the bankers to give us her address. She refuses to answer any questions. All we have are these telegrams.
And you want to get hold of this, don't it?
Well, yes.
It's perfectly easy, Margaret. She wants her books, yes? Send her after them to Howard's End. When she's there, you just stroll in. If there's nothing wrong with her, so much the better. But remember, the motor will be around the corner. We quite simply run her up to London to a specialist. No time at all.
That's impossible.
Why is it impossible?
Because Helen and I, we don't speak that particular language, if you see my meaning.
Yes, because you have scruples, and that's all very well, and I understand perfectly. I'm as scrupulous as any man alive, I hope. But when it is a case like this, when it is a question of madness...
I deny it's madness.
You said yourself.
It's madness when I say it, but not when you say it.
Peter, we may as well keep Howard's End out of it.
Right, Charles.
Well, the whole house is a sixes and sevens. We don't want any more mess.
And who is we? Pray, Charles, who is we?
Beg your pardon, I'm sure. I seem always to be intruding.
No, Charles, Charles.
And let's send a telegram. Come along, let's do it.
He follows his son outside.
I really can't have this sort of behaviour, Charles.
What?
Margaret. She's far too sweet-natured to mind, but I mind for her.
Charles looks after him resentfully. A telegram.
All your books now at Howard's End. Miss Avery will let you in 3 p.m. Monday. Meg.
Henry briefs a doctor.
Our main object is not to frighten Miss Schlegel, you understand? The trouble seems to be nervous. Wouldn't you say so, Margaret?
Would you say she was normal?
Well, she's always been highly strung. Musical, literary, artistic, but quite normal. Quite a charming girl, really.
Would you say there was anything congenital?
No.
Or anything hereditary?
No?
At Howard's End, Helen is sitting inside the wooden porch reading a book. Margaret quickly gets out of the car and runs towards the house. As she reaches the gate...
Margaret?
Yes, Henry. Just wait here, just for a second.
Helen is pregnant.
Oh, darling. Quickly, just get inside, please. Just quickly.
Pushing her into the house.
Miss Schlegel is managing. You can go back to the motor. Margaret?
Henry, I shall surely need your advice later. But now I must be alone with Helen.
Sir?
Yes, please, my dear kind Henry.
Yes.
Thank you.
Henry walks away to join the doctor. As the car drives off, Margaret finds Helen collecting her belongings.
Where will our furniture?
Oh, there's been a mistake.
Miss Avery comes in.
How well the carpet fits. I'll be sending some milk round and we should be ordering coals.
There's been a mistake, Miss Avery. You've been very kind, but we are not going to live at Howard's End. This is not our house.
The elderly woman walks away as if she has not heard.
I think she may be a little touched. I'm sorry, Helen. I ought not to have...
No, you ought not to have tricked me this way.
We thought you were ill.
As you see, I'm not ill, but I'm expecting a child in June. Is the coast clear? I must leave. I'm going back to Germany in the morning.
My love to Aunt Julie and to Tibby.
Let me have that.
It's curious, isn't it, that our carpet fits?
Yes, the sword looks right, too.
Yes, isn't it?
She walks towards the fireplace.
Someone's polished it.
Yes. I'll carry this.
She picks up Helen's case.
Even if you didn't want to tell me.
Henry, I understand that. I thought I had to be by myself. That's why I hid away in Germany.
Tibby,
no, Meg, really. I alone must be responsible for myself and this child. And I want to be. Of course, Leonard doesn't know.
Leonard? Leonard Bast?
Yes. Oh, Meg. Did you ever hear from him again?
Stunned, Margaret shakes her head.
I have no idea what he's doing now.
Or what's happened to either of them.
Margaret and Henry walk in Charles and Dolly's garden.
Dolly?
Hello.
My dear, I must ask you. Was your sister wearing a wedding ring?
No.
What?
No. Henry, I really came just to ask a favour about Howard's End.
Yes, one point at a time. Please, sit down. Margaret? I must now ask you the name of her seducer. You may have some inkling, and the slightest hint would help us.
Us, who is us?
Well, I thought it best to bring Charles.
That was unnecessary.
My dear, listen to me. Charles and I wish to act in your sister's best interests. It's still not too late to clear her name.
What are we to make her seducer marry her? But Henry, suppose he turned out to be married already. One has heard of such cases.
Alarmed, Henry looks to see if Dolly has overheard them.
then he must pay heavily for his misconduct, mustn't he? Mr. Garn. I want to talk to you. Listen to me.
She gets up.
Margaret. Come here.
He takes her hands.
Look at me. What's the matter?
She leans forward and kisses him.
May I ask you my question now?
Certainly.
Tomorrow Helen goes to Germany.
Yes?
I'm fine. Tonight, with your permission...
Yes?
She would like to sleep at Howard's End.
Helen? But why at Howard's End? I don't understand.
It is an odd request.
Hmm?
But you know what women in her state are.
Yes, I could understand it if it were her own home, associations and so on, but... Helen has no associations with Howard's End. I don't see why she wants to stay there. She'll only catch cold anyway.
Call it fancy, but she wants to.
I don't understand. If she wants to sleep there one night, she'll want to sleep there too.
No, no, just...
And she'll never get her out of the house.
But that matters so very much.
Of course it will. It's
no, no, Henry. We will only trouble Howard's End for this one night.
Margaret,
I shall stay with her.
No, that's quite impossible. And that's madness. I want you here to meet Charles.
What has Charles to do with this?
Margaret, as the future owner of Howard's End, has everything to do with Charles.
What way? Please answer me, Henry.
Getting yourself this dolly in the servants'
room. What way? Will Helen's condition depreciate the property?
Margaret?
Dolly is playing with the baby. She listens with interest.
Margaret?
Henry follows Margaret across the lawn.
I shall do what I can for your sister, but I cannot treat her as if nothing has happened. I should be forced to my position in society if I did.
Tomorrow she will go to Germany and trouble society no longer. Tonight she asks... to sleep in your empty house. May she, will you give my sister leave? Will you forgive her? As you yourself have been forgiven.
As I myself
Please
have been...
answer my question, Henry.
Your sister can sleep at the hotel. I have my children and the memory of my dear wife to consider.
You have mentioned Mrs. Wilcox. In reply... May I mention Mrs. Best?
Nothing yourself all day, Mark.
Henry, listen. You have had a mistress. I forgave you. My sister has a lover. You drive her from the house. Why can you not be honest for once in your life and say to yourself what Helen has done, I have done?
He shakes off her hand abruptly.
I repeat what I said before. I did not give your sister leave to sleep at Howard's End. Now, do you understand?
Margaret flinches at Henry's angry tone. In Tibby's room at Oxford, Charles looks around scornfully.
If a man played about with my sister, I'd send a bullet through him. But I suppose you're sunk too deep in books. And rubbish. Mind what happens to your sister.
As a matter of fact, I mind very much what happens to my sister. But I have a different way of expressing it from yours. To speak of different manners.
By Jove, I'm glad of my way. I'm glad that my father never sent me to the varsity if this is what they teach you here. Look, you must know something of your sister's life.
Do you know of anyone?
He confronts Tibby.
Whom do you suspect?
Did she mention anyone by name? Come on, yes or no? You're hiding something, man. Speak up.
She did mention some friend called Leonard Bast.
Leonard Bast, eh? Leonard Bast. Do you know him? Have you had any dealings with him?
Tibby backs against the mantelpiece.
What a family.
What a family. God help the poor Peter.
I'd say God help my poor sisters.
In London, Leonard approaches the Wilcox house where Annie is dealing with a tradesman.
But they were ordered on approval.
Excuse me.
Excuse me.
Wait.
Annie comes up the basement steps.
Excuse me, I was looking for Miss Schlegel.
It's...
Leonard Bast, I used to call at Wickham Place. Is Miss Schlegel in? Or Mrs. Wilcox?
They're all down at Howard's End.
Where would that be now, Howard's End?
It's at Hilton, near Hilton Junction. Are you all right? Let me get you a drink of
no,
water.
No, thank you.
He walks slowly away.
Please take them, man. This is...
Come on, off you go.
Henry is smoking a cigar in Charles's garden.
I don't want you to conclude that my wife and I have had anything like a quarrel. She has overwrought us, it would not be naturally.
Naturally.
The question to my mind is connected to something far greater. The rights of property itself.
Absolutely.
The house is mine and will one day be yours, Charles. When I say that I don't want anyone living at Howards End, I mean that no one is to live at Howards End.
Then I take it tomorrow morning I may go up in the motor?
Yes, say that you're acting as my representative and that they must clear out at once. You must go to bed now. I've cut you off far too late.
Can I do anything for you, sir?
No, nothing. Thank you, my boy. Good night.
Night.
He shakes his father's hand. Leonard's bedroom. He wakes suddenly, disturbing Jackie. She closes the flimsy curtains to block out the flickering lights.
It's only the trip.
She snuggles down again beside him. Embracing Jackie, Leonard dreams he is once again following Helen through the rain. He reaches an iron gate which closes in front of him. Desperately, he stretches out his arm through the bars towards her as she turns and smiles at him, holding up his umbrella and silently calling his name. Waking from his dream, Leonard presses his pillow over his ears and opens his eyes. Morning. Leonard stands at the window.
Len, you got that pain again, Len?
You're all dressed.
I'm just going out for a bit.
Still lying in bed, she takes his hand.
Oh, Len.
What, oh, Jackie? See you again later.
He smiles down at her, then takes his hat from a peg. Fondly, she watches him leave. He comes out of his front door and walks along the mean, cobbled street. The pavements are littered with discarded sacks and boxes. A man wheels past a loaded barrow. In the country, a steam train crosses an elegant iron bridge and arrives at Hilton Station. As a crowd of children climb onto the train, Leonard gets out and walks the length of the platform towards a porter. A passenger rushes in front of him and just catches the train as it begins to move. Leonard asks the porter for directions. In cap and goggles, Charles drives at high speed along a country lane. Ahead of him, a hot and weary Leonard is obliged to step into the verge to avoid being run over. Leonard pauses for a moment and wipes his brow. Then continues his journey, imagining himself in the bluebell wood of his daydream.
Did you see the dawn? And was it wonderful?
No. It was only grey.
Stumbling slightly, he crosses the field in front of Howards End and slowly walks towards the gateway. Young Tom comes out into the lane. Leonard leans heavily on the gatepost, his face pale and drawn. He crosses his arms in front of him, as if in pain. Inside the house.
Yes, thank you very much, Charles. There are two boxes of books in the...
Leonard appears in the doorway.
Miss Schlegel, Mrs. Wilcox, you all have forgotten me.
No, Mr. Best, I have not forgotten you.
I only want to know where your sister is. Where Helen is.
Who is it?
Helen? Leonard!
Also, this is Leonard Bass.
Charles strikes him across the face.
This is for insulting the name of woman.
Give me a stick!
Can you please
Margaret, a stick!
Charles, we are perfectly capable of dealing with this.
He draws the sword and viciously attacks Leonard.
Stand up, man! Stand up!
Leonard is hurled against a heavy bookcase. It falls in slow motion, emptying its contents on top of him, knocking him to the ground where he lies without moving. Later, a curious crowd gathers outside as Leonard is carried away.
So it is your opinion that he was in the last stages of heart disease?
Would not be professional to say so before an autopsy, but in private, that could well be my diagnosis.
Obviously he was in the last stage, because the moment I touched him with the sword, he simply crumpled up.
Excuse me, sir. What sword would that have been?
Well, it's inside. You better follow me.
He goes into the house, closely followed by Henry and a police inspector. Charles indicates the fireplace.
It's their father's old German sword. Of course, I only touched him with the flat of it.
Just once?
Yes, once. Perhaps twice.
The inspector turns to Henry.
I presume you will be staying in Hilton, Mr. Wilcox, sir.
Ah, yes, yes. I'd be available as long as it's necessary.
And Mr. Charles Wilcox, we shall be requesting your presence at the inquest, sir.
Yes, well, I did expect that. I shall naturally be the most important witness.
He smiles with self-importance. In the garden, Miss Avery opens a metal gate. Helen passes through it into the meadow, moving slowly and with difficulty, and the elderly woman puts a comforting arm around her shoulders as they walk away from the house, through the long grass and the wildflowers. Margaret stands beside a hedge, watching the two women as they walk. She leans on the fence and wearily puts her hand to her head as Henry appears behind her.
Margaret?
She turns and walks towards him, holding out some keys.
Good, Henry, I was going to come up to Hilton to give you these.
Yeah. I have something to tell you, Margaret.
Never mind, Henry, I don't need to hear it. I'm leaving you. My life is with Helen now.
Yes. I'm extremely tired. Come and sit down. For a moment.
Yes, for a moment. We'll have to sit here on the grass then.
Yes.
Here are your keys. We shall be staying with Miss Avery at the farm till we can leave.
Yes. Where are you going?
To Germany. We'll start as soon as possible after the inquest.
After the inquest?
If Helen is well enough.
You realise what the verdict of the inquest will be, don't you?
Yes. Heart disease.
No, manslaughter. If not worse. Charles may go to prison. I dare not tell him. I don't know what to do.
He tries to hide his tears.
Sorry.
At Hilton railway station, a crowd has gathered. In slow motion, a solemn Charles Wilcox appears between two policemen, walking as if in a dream across the platform to a waiting train. The station master opens a carriage door and the first policeman gets into the compartment. The inquisitive onlookers watch with interest as Charles, his wrists handcuffed, hesitates for a moment on the platform. He looks directly at the station master, then awkwardly shakes him by the hand. Now, staring blankly ahead, he follows the policeman into the carriage. The engine's powerful pistons turn as the train begins to move. It carries the unfortunate Charles away from Hilton and Howards End. The following summer. In the sitting room at Howards End, Margaret is sewing, while Henry outlines his plans to Dolly, Evie, and Paul.
Now, is this going to suit everyone? Because I don't want you all coming here later on and complaining that I've been unfair. Paul?
Apparently, it's got to suit us.
If only to speak, my boy, and I'll leave the house to you entirely.
Since I have to be at the business all week, I'll find something that suits me better. This place is not really the country, and, well, it's certainly not the town.
Does my arrangement suit you, Evie?
Of course, Father.
Good. You, Dolly?
I thought Charles wanted it for the boys, but last time I saw him, he said no, because we can't possibly live in this part of England again. Charles even says we ought to change our name, but I can't think what to. Wilcox just suits Charles and me, and I can't think of any other name.
Yeah. Then I leave Hard's End to my wife, absolutely. Let everyone understand that, and after I'm dead, let there be no jealousy and no surprise. In consequence, I leave my wife no money, that is her own wish, and all my other assets are to be divided among you. This house, Howard's End, she intends at her death to leave to her nephew.
Outside the window, Helen lifts a small boy in petticoats from a wooden wheelbarrow. She swings him around happily. Dolly ties her scarf.
Curious. Mrs. Wilcox wanted Margaret to have Howard's...
Shh! And now she gets it after all.
Dolly,
when I put my foot in...
Evie hurries her away. Margaret looks after them curiously. As Henry leaves the sitting room, he smiles with pleasure as she kisses him warmly. In the field across the lane, a man drives two horses pulling a grass cutter. Helen and Tom hold the baby's hands and help him to walk across the field. Dolly stands watching them. Evie and Paul climb into their car, anxious for her to join them.
Oh, it's a sweet child. Rather like Diddums was at that age.
Come along.
Helen picks up her little boy and points across the field.
Look who's there.
Henry and Margaret hold hands as they walk in the garden.
What did Dolly mean about Howard's End?
My poor Ruth, during her last days, scribbled your name on a piece of paper. Knowing her not to be herself, I set it aside. Didn't do wrong, did I? There they are. Okay. Bye. Bye.
Arm in arm, they wave goodbye as the car leaves the house and begins to drive along the lane. Across the road, the farm worker slowly turns the horses to cut another swathe of grass. Holding her baby in her arms, Helen watches him for a moment, then turns and walks with Tom across the field, back towards Howard's End. The audio description of this video was written by Di Langford and read by Joanna Myers, and was made possible by the kind support of Mayfair Productions, Cordwell Communications, FWB Products Limited, Jones and Shufflebottom Limited, Robert Keyes Music Centre, AJ Philpott and Sons, and PMT Limited. The cast, in order of appearance: Ruth Wilcox, Vanessa Redgrave, Helen Schlegel, Helena Bonham Carter, Paul Wilcox, Joseph Bennett, Margaret Schlegel, Emma Thompson, Aunt Julie, Prunella Scales, Tibby Schlegel, Adrian Ross Magenti, Annie, Joe Kendall, Henry Wilcox, Anthony Hopkins, Charles Wilcox, James Wilby, Evie Wilcox, Gemma Redgrave, Station Master, Ian Latimer, Leonard Bast, Samuel West, Pianist, Mary Nash, Man Asking a Question, Siegbert Prower, Dolly Wilcox, Susie Lindemann, Jackie Bast, Nicola Duffett, Luncheon Guests, Mark Tandy, Andrew St. Clair, Anne Lampton, Emma Godfrey, Duncan Brown, Ian Kelly, Maid at Howard's End, Atlanta White, Porphyrian Supervisor, Gerald Paris, Blue Stockings, Ali Byrne, Sally Gagan, Paula Stockbridge, Bridget Duval, Lucy Freeman, Harriet Stewart, Tina Leslie. Percy Cahill, Mark Payton. Simpsons Carver, David Delaney. Wilcox Baby, Mary McWilliams. Miss Avery, Barbara Hicks. Chauffeur, Rodney Rymel. Tom, the farmer's boy, Luke Parry. Bank supervisor, Anthony Gilding. Colonel Fussell, Peter Sellier. Albert Fussell, Crispin Bonham Carter. Wedding guests, Patricia Lawrence, Marjorie Mason. Martlet, Jim Bowden. Porphyrian chief clerk, Alan James. Telegraph operator, Jocelyn Cobb. Doctor, Peter Darling. Delivery man, Terence Sack. Police inspector, Brian Lipson. Helen's child, Bar Hextall Smith. Co-producer, Anne Wingate. Casting, Celestia Fox. Costume design, Jenny Bevan, John Bright. Production design, Luciana Arrighi. Executive producer, Paul Bradley. Editor, Andrew Marcus. Music, Richard Robbins. Photography, Tony Pierce Roberts. Screenplay, Ruth Prower Jubvala. Producer, Ishmael Merchant. Director, James Ivory. Assistant Director, Chris Newman. Production Managers, John Downs, Caroline Hill. Production Coordinator, Nick O'Hagan. Sound Recordist, Mike Shoring. Supervising Sound Editor, Campbell Askew. Re-recording Mixers, Robin O'Donoghue, Dominic Lester. Art Director, John Ralph. Set Director, Ian Whittaker. Location Scout, Joe Friedman. Production Buyer, Jill Quertier. Art Department Assistant, Philip Robinson. Chief Makeup, Christine Beveridge. Chief Hairdresser, Carol Hemming. Associate Editors, Michelle Gorchow, James Marsh. Assistant Editor, Tom Freeman. Dialogue Editor, Sarah Morton. Conductor, Harry Rabinowitz. Music performed by the English Chamber Orchestra. Piano soloist, Martin Jones. Music associate, Robert Stewart. Music coordinator, Jeff Alexander. Music recording, Keith Grant. Tangos performed by Teddy Peiro and his tango group. Continuity, Jean Bourne. Stills photographer, Derek Santini. Property master, Barry Wilkinson. Dressing props, Charlie Ixer, Peter Wallace. Special effects, effects associates. Wardrobe supervisors, Stephen Cornish, Sue Honeybourne. Location manager, Jean Ferber. The makers of this film would like to thank Nippon Film Development and Finance Incorporated, Guinness Mahon and Company Limited, Arthur Sanderson and Sons Limited, Garrard, the Crown Jewellers, Magdalen College, Oxford, National Railway Museum, York, St. James Court Hotel, London, Simpsons in the Strand, Cosprop, London, Dame Guinevere Tilney, Roger and Caroline Shapland. Music. Bridal Lullaby by Percy Grainger, courtesy of Bardic Edition. Mock Morris by Percy Grainger, courtesy of Schott & Co. Limited. La Danse, 1906, by André Derain. Copyright, 1992, Artists' Rights Society. New York, ADAGP, courtesy of the Friedart Foundation. Sound re-recording, Twickenham Film Studios. Optical Effects, Peerless Camera Company, London. Optical Film Effects Limited. Title Design, Oliver Harrison. Processed and printed by Technicolor, London. Dolby Stereo in selected theatres. Original soundtrack available on Nimbus Records, compact discs and cassettes. Copyright 1991, Merchant Ivory Productions Limited, all rights reserved. This motion picture is protected under the copyright laws of the United States of America and other countries. Any unauthorized exhibition, distribution, or reproduction of this motion picture, or any part thereof, including the soundtrack, may result in severe civil and criminal penalties. Certified by number 31569, Motion Picture Association of America. A Merchant Ivory film in association with Film 4 International.